One Leg on Earth by Pemi Aguda. Summary of One Leg on Earth by Pemi Aguda I. The overture, The Fruit and the Bridge. The narrative of One Leg on Earth begins with a section titled Fruit, which serves as a chilling prologue to the atmospheric mystery of Lagos. It centers on Miriam Akie, a woman who has endured 13 years of desperate prayer, physical hardship, and spiritual appeals to conceive. At 38, she is finally 6 months pregnant, experiencing what the narrator describes as an ugly joy, a bliss so heavy and potent it causes physical nausea. While stuck in a typical, grueling standstill on Third Mainland Bridge with her husband, Victor, Miriam is overcome by a sudden, misplaced euphoria. To the shock of the surrounding commuters and her husband, Miriam exits the vehicle, skips between the stalled cars, and dances with a frothing joy. Ignoring Victor's frantic calls, she skips to the edge of the bridge and launches herself belly first into the Lagos Lagoon. This act is not portrayed as a moment of despair, but as a flight into the arms of something welcoming, setting the stage for a city-wide phenomenon that will haunt the rest of the novel, the systematic, seemingly ecstatic suicides of pregnant women in Lagos, too. Yosoye's arrival and the new Lagos life. The core of the novel follows Yosoye Bakare, a recent university graduate who has moved from the relatively quiet city of Ibadan to Lagos for her mandatory National Youth Service Corps, NYSC, year. Yosoye is a reserved, hesitant speaker who has spent much of her life feeling like a hollow outline of a person, an outsider even within her own family. She views Lagos as a crucible for transformation, a place where she can finally become a new woman and demand things from life. She rents a tiny, shoddy, self-contained apartment on the mainland, defined by its cantaloupe-colored walls, upside-down power outlets, and the constant noise of neighbors through the thin walls. In her first week, driven by a desire for adventure, she goes to a local joint, drinks a Star Radler, and engages in a spontaneous, somewhat detached sexual encounter with a stranger in a cheap motel. This encounter, characterized by the man's refusal to use a condom and his subsequent disappearance into the ravenous tide of the Lagos night, will provide the catalyst for Yosoye's internal transformation. Yosoye is assigned to work at Jegede and Kyari Design, JKD, a prestigious architecture firm whose site office is located in Omi City, a massive 5.3 million square meter patch of land currently being reclaimed from the Atlantic Ocean. Omi City is a surreal, white landscape of sand and wind, shielded by a 9-meter-high sea wall. It is here that Yosoye first encounters the firm's hierarchical and often cold professional environment. 3. The architecture of power, Omi City and JKD. At JKD, Yosoye is initially an errand girl, relegated to moving technical drawings and buying puff-puff for the designers. She interacts with a colorful cast of colleagues. Adam, the haughty, bug-eyed receptionist who enjoys hazing the intern, Benga, a muscular, lock-wearing senior designer who serves as a paternal, though often irritable, mentor to Yosoye, the designers, Faye, Chisholm, Simisola, Ike, a group of ambitious young professionals who are deeply invested in the purity of Omi City's vision, the architect, Jegede, the firm's leader, a crazy genius, with a cold gaze and a polka-dot bow tie, who views the reclaimed land as a pure blank slate, free from the corruption of Lagos history. Yosoye is disoriented by the blankness of Omi City, which feels like a separate mass, suspended in space, disconnected from the concerns of the mainland. The city is guarded by Jonah, a reticent security man in a wide-brimmed straw hat who refuses to show his face or acknowledge the office staff. Early in her tenure, Yosoye is nearly fired after the architect catches her sleeping at her desk. However, she has just discovered the double lines of a pregnancy test. When the architect learns of her condition, his reaction is unexpectedly reverent. Invoking his grandmother's belief that a pregnant woman and a boyan exists in a liminal space between heaven and earth, Esekan Aa, Esekan Oren, he sees her pregnancy as a good omen for the city JKD is gestating. He decides to keep her on staff, tasking her with writing the voice of the city to make its technical plans accessible to private investors, IV. The geography of grief, the suicide mothers. As Yosoye's body begins to change, her focus is drawn to the escalating crisis of the suicide mothers. The phenomenon, which the government and official media largely ignore or treat as disconnected events, thrives in the digital realm of blogs and social media. Yosoye becomes obsessed with tracing the patterns, scouring the internet for the names and faces of the dead, Auntie Salome, Miriam Akie, Ozenahoro, Isatu Jibril, Rakaya Sidi. Dot. This obsession is fueled by a traumatic event. While walking alone at night, Yosoe witnesses a gathering at a canal where a pregnant woman has just drowned herself. The reactions of the bystanders are a mix of reverence and condemnation, labeling it a bad death that shames the family name. This sight haunts Yosoe's dreams, which begin to feature the drowned women as a vortex of joy rather than a source of horror. In these dreams, the women hold and welcome her, the collective existence, annihilating Yosoe's lifelong loneliness and making her feel, for the first time, like she belongs. Yosoe's sensitivity to the crisis is heightened by her body's Bluetooth frequency of awareness. She begins to hear a swan song, a humming, vibrating sound that she later discovers is shared by the artist beloved. This song represents a shared dread and a pull toward the water that the women seem unable to resist. The maternal ghost, Olabisi and Abaddon. A significant portion of the novel explores Yosoe's fractured relationship with her mother, Olabisi. A seamstress in Abaddon, Olabisi is a woman who absorbs information to kill and memorialize it inside herself. Her parenting style was defined by a formal, distant brand of togetherness that left Yosoe feeling like a foreigner in her own home. A central metaphor for this disconnection is the story of Mandy. As a child, Yosoe had an imaginary friend named Mandy. One day, Olabisi, terrified by her daughters, reaching for what isn't there, shouted at Yosoe to stop the nonsense. She returned from the market with an oversized stuffed elephant, also named Mandy, and forced Yosoe to touch it, declaring, "Your mother is what is real." This act replaced Yosoe's internal world with a tangible, but ultimately hollow, physical object, a gesture Yosoe recognizes as her mother's failure to truly see her. When Yosoe visits Abaddon to announce her pregnancy, Olabisi is disapproving and fearful, warning her that Lagos warps your wants, and that the best option is to leave. Olabisi reveals her own history of being tricked by the mirage of Lagos after a musician abandoned her with Yosoe in her womb. She views the city as a squat demon that lures innocent people down its throat. Why? The aesthetics of dread, beloved, and the art of drowning. Back in Lagos, Yosoe enters the orbit of beloved. A tall, bald, and striking artist with a flattened cheekbone. Beloved is a woman of immense power and shikara, who has conquered Lagos through her art. Her paintings often feature oversized clouds, threatening tiny stick people, capturing a sense of ambient dread that resonates with Yosoe. Beloved acts as a mentor and temptress, introducing Yosoe to the sexy side of Lagos while simultaneously probing her unknowable internal life. However, their relationship reaches a breaking point when Beloved attempts to glamorize the suicides. Beloved views the women's choice to die as the ultimate proof that your body belongs to you, and an act of artistic transcendence. She suggests that Yosoe's baby is merely a ticket into a glorious circle of powerful women. Yosoe, who desperately wants to use her baby to fill the hole of her own hollowness and find cheesy TV-style love, is repulsed by Beloved's vision. Beloved dismisses Yosoe's aspirations as ordinary, telling her that a baby can never fill such a void. This betrayal makes Yosoe realize that Beloved may have been making art out of Yosoe's suffering all along. 7. The Hidden History, Eti Omi and the Displaced. While JKD prepares for a massive groundbreaking ceremony for Phase 1 of Omi City, Yosoe begins to uncover the metaphoric sins upon which the city is built. Through endurance, her Okada motorcycle taxi driver, she learns the truth about the land JKD has resurrected. Before Omi City was sand, it was Eti Omi. A vibrant, generations-old waterfront community of fisher people who lived on stilts over the marsh. The Lagos state government, in collaboration with private interests, destroyed Eti Omi in a three-day siege of bulldozers and chainsaws to clear the way for development. Endurance reveals that Jonah, the security guard, is a survivor of Eti Omi. Jonah returned from work to find his home in ruins and his young son crushed under the wreckage. He took the job at JKD because he killed his family and wants the designers to see him every day, so you people can never forget. Yosoe realizes that JKD's architectural plans are a form of fiction that deletes the past to sell a future to the elite. She feels a righteous, petulant indignation and decides to sabotage the firm's public image. She sends an anonymous tip to a popular blogger, Lagos Justice Ninja, revealing that four pregnant corpsewere recently found on Omi City's coast and were being covered up for PR reasons. 8. The Breaking Point, Groundbreaking and the Laugh. The novel reaches its climax during the ceremonial groundbreaking of Phase 1. The event is a grotesque display of wealth and consumption, with investors and designers celebrating, on top of graves, while the city outside is paralyzed by the suicide crisis. The architect, unbothered by the rumors Yosoye leaked, offers her a full-time writing job. He wants her to write a profile on herself to be used in the firm's newsletter, effectively turning her into the face of Omi City to prove that the city is safe for pregnant women. He characterizes her as a liminal figure with an instinct for the future. Yosoye, struck by the absurdity and hypocrisy of the situation, begins to laugh. It is a demented, unstoppable rumble that takes over her whole body. In her mind, her sisters, the dead pregnant women, step out of the shadows and join her in a collective chorus of laughter that surrounds the architect and Benga. She realizes that she no longer wants the brand of future they are selling. Ix, the descent and the return. Driven by a meeting of past, present, and future, Yosoye marches to the waterfront. In a state of giddy surrender, she walks into the Atlantic Ocean. Feeling the waves rope her ankle and draw her in. She experiences a moment of total fullness, where her hollowness is finally filled by the water and the welcoming embrace of the dead women. However, the narrative takes a brutal turn into reality. Yosoye is found and hauled out of the water by restraining hands. The experience is defined not by transcendence, but by intense physical agony as she suffers a miscarriage on the wet sand. Her future seeps out into the reclaimed land, blood crawling to the ocean to meet the past losses buried in the deep. The novel concludes with Yosoye returning to Abadan to live with Olabisi. In the aftermath of her foray into water, she and her mother find a sticky, quiet form of reconciliation. For the first time in nearly two decades, they sleep in the same bed, the breath sinking, in an acknowledgement that a mother is what is real, key insights and thematic elements one. The body is an outline and mass. Throughout the novel, Yosoye describes herself as a hollow outline. She views her pregnancy as a little dark spot that will eventually shade her in until she becomes a real person with grounding mass. This internal struggle with identity is mirrored in the city of Lagos, which is also an outline being filled in by reclaimed sand, a process that Yosoye eventually rejects as a work of dangerous imagination. 2. The metaphor of water. Water is the novel's most powerful and ambiguous symbol. It is the unconscious spiritual realm, a place where the suicide mothers find a collective, homogeneous existence, a weapon of erasure, the force the government uses, and reclaiming the land from, to destroy communities like Eti Omi, the ultimate future. As Yosoye reflects during her swim, everybody's future was water. To water they would surrender. Point 3. The failure of careful. Yosoye is constantly warned to be careful by her mother, by strangers on the bus, and by Keaton. The novel posits that careful begat isolation and boredom, and that the women who jump are those who have chosen a powerful, albeit tragic, form of agency over a life of ongoingness and routine. 4. The one leg on earth philosophy. The architect's grandmother's proverb, esse kan aa, esse kan oran, is the philosophical anchor of the book. It frames pregnancy as a liminal state that makes women bridges between worlds. While the architect uses this to justify the corporate gestation of Omi City, Yosoye eventually interprets it as a call to rejoin the heaven or the deep, where the women who truly see her reside. Point 5. Resilience of the displaced. The bridge coda highlights the resilience of those Lagos has abandoned, the three little girls who hold protest signs for money they use to buy hot balls of joy, puff puff. They, like the mud women, who wear their history as an interruption and a warning, represent a Lagos that persists despite the vanity spires and vetting systems of the elite. The book ends on a note of sticky memory, suggesting that while Lagos may have no memory, the bodies of its citizens and the earth they walk upon remember everything. This summary is for educational purposes only. This audio is exclusively created for AfriNovels.com. Thank you.